You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Hey, welcome everybody to the Here District. Marcus Johnson, joined by number one son, Chris Johnson. I gotta order them because I've got so many of them, man. I got like five sons, you know. So. Number one, Chris Johnson. Yeah. It's all good. It's a blessing.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
The date that we are taping here is actually my mother's birthday. She passed away, about 3 years ago, Chris? But I say that to say, how does that relate to the Milwaukee Bucks? March 24th. 5 years ago. You remember that day, Chris? I got my jersey retired. Number 8 was hoisted into the rafters. Man, some of my favorite teammates, Bob Lanier, the late, great Bob Lanier, rest in peace, Almighty Dauber, Junior Bridgman, Sidney Moncrief, Lloyd Walton, Lorenzo Romar, high school and junior high school best friend Ed Waters, current coach of Crenshaw High School now, son of Maxine Waters, Auntie Maxine, one of the most influential congresswomen in the country. But everybody showed up, and my mother was here and flew out, and 17,000 people at Five Surf Forum sang happy birthday to her on the 24th. Her birthday is today, but on the 24th, on that day, and she, it was one of the most memorable moments for her and for me also. So I just wanted to shout out the Milwaukee Bucks for the outstanding job they did and the memories that they created, Chris. You know what I'm saying? You remember when I kind of broke
down?
Yeah,
that was amazing.
Yeah,
that
I broke down in tears, man. and you and the rest of my four sons came up and started, consoling me, and Mo started brushing my hair because he's a barber, Mariah, my son. So anyway, so just a great, great moment, man. I wanted to kind of recall that. Your thoughts on that, Chris? Any quick thoughts on that?
Yeah, of course. Just such a classy move by the Bucks organization to get us all out there as a family, to see your name up in the rafters, which was, you know, some say long overdue, but it was just one of the biggest honors that I've ever had in basketball. And when the crowd broke into the serenade and sang happy birthday to Grandmommy, her face, our faces, our joy on the inside, it was just like, you can never replicate it or measure it.
Yeah, and just to add to that, she hadn't been on an airplane in like 30 years, you know, ever since. It's been a long, long time.
She's a Bucks fan. She's such a Bucks fan. Yeah, remember the whole Malcolm Brogdon, her thing with Malcolm Brogdon?
Oh, yeah. Malcolm Brogdon. But hadn't been on an airplane in 30 years, got on one to make it to this special event, and just a great, great memory. And then Junior Bridgman hooked up a beautiful reception at the No Studios up in the Beer District here in Milwaukee. I mean, it was just that is a famous kind of a eclectic place where John Ridley, who won an Oscar for writing 12 Years a Slave, that's his place, that's his spot. He made it available to us. He and his sister Lisa, he was there, and so man, just great memories. Anyway, so I digress, but let's talk about these Bucks, man. Let's talk about these Bucks. Guess who's back?
Oh, yeah. Cash Money.
Guess who's back? Man, we miss this brother, man. I miss this brother. Chris Middleton, look, I've been around this team for 9 years, right? So when I first got here, Chris Middleton was in his second or third year with the Bucks. He was kind of a throw-in. I think it was a Brandon Jennings and Brandon Knight trade or something. He was kind of a throw-in second-round pick. I first met him when he was going to school. Where was he? At Texas A&M, I believe, but playing for Mark Turgeon. Yep. And they were playing the Huskies in Seattle. And they had these two guards. And I can't remember their names, but the one guard had this gruesome leg injury and broke his leg. Donald Sloan, maybe. And I forget the other guard's name. But this gruesome leg, one of the most gruesome leg injuries in-game that I've ever seen. And I'm doing the game with Steve Fizeak. I had met Chris Middleton. He was a freshman. I reminded Chris of that when I first got here. And he's like, yeah, that's what opened up more minutes for me that season as a freshman. And that's what really gave me confidence. I started playing a lot more because of that. So it's just interesting how our paths had crossed years before. But when I got here, Chris, this is the point. Tim Gergovich, all-time great assistant coach. He was an assistant coach for George Karl. in Seattle, so I knew him in those days. He was an assistant under Jason Kidd when I got here, coached at UNLV, assistant under Tark with that Pittsburgh connection. You know, brought the amoeba, amoeba defense to Vegas back. You know, when Larry Johnson and Stacey Augmon and Greg Anthony and Anderson Hunt, that whole crew, they were terrorizing college basketball. But it was Gerg that brought the amoeba defense from back in Pittsburgh. But anyway, Gerg approached me. We had worked together doing some skill development out in Los Angeles for a couple of years. And so Gerg approached me and said, I want you to talk to Chris Middleton and see what you can do to help his confidence. And so Chris and I met, and after talking to him 5 minutes, I saw that he didn't lack confidence. He was just quiet, just kind of unassuming, introverted a little bit, but he had confidence. And so I told Gerg he's going to be okay. And I don't know if it was that season or the next, he had a couple of back-to-back games against Oklahoma City and the Pacers where he had 33, then had 35 back-to-back. And that's when I could first see, you know, that this guy had the potential to be a big-time player in the league. So it's just so good to have him back, man.
Em, what do you think what has surprised you the most about Chris's return? Like, I know we folks expected him probably to struggle a little bit. Like, what areas of his game have you been like, dang, he hasn't missed a beat?
Well, so here's the thing. When he was out an extended period before, he came back and had a great game his first game returning, and then he struggled after that, which is understandable. This time around, coming back from the ankle injury sustained February 6th, stepping on the foot of Kevin Durant down in Phoenix, he had 20-plus points his first came back. I'm like, okay, that's kind of like he did last time. Second game, he's probably going to be a little bit more rusty and struggle a bit more. 20-plus points the next game, you know. So the fact that he looks so sharp really impressed me and reminded me just how you learn as a player how to maximize your rehab. You know what I'm saying? So he understood what he needed to do in terms of, and he talks about it, his conditioning was the main thing that he worked on when he was out. So probably some non-weight-bearing stuff. You've been through this, you know, the way they do it nowadays, you know, it's a whole different thing than when I was coming around. But today they've got all these different things, you know, running underwater or underwater treadmills, all this great stuff you can do.
Where you don't lose too much of your conditioning by the time you come
and you don't
back. They simulate it.
You don't put stress on your body parts. So the fact that he looked so good in terms of his conditioning was the thing that impressed me the most, to answer your question. Another quick thing, so this starting unit for the Bucks, and so he makes them whole again. So this is the first time the starting unit had been together since January 31st. I think when he hurt his ankle, I think Brooke was out for personal reasons. I think it was the birth of a child. So this is the first time they've been back. This starting unit, Chris, starting five, over 1,100 possessions. This is going into the game against the Oklahoma City Thunder, so I'm not even counting that game. But 1,100 possessions they played together, the starting unit. Their offensive rating, 124.4 per 100 possessions. Their defensive rating, 108.4 per 100 possessions, a plus 16 differential. Now, the Boston Celtics lead the league with like a plus 12 differential. So those numbers, 124 points a game, 108 defensively, they would like lead the league right now. So that gives you an idea of how effective, you know, despite the fact that the defense hadn't really arrived yet, when these guys were on the floor together, they did a really, really terrific job at both ends of the floor.
Yeah, the chemistry between the guys really stands out. That's something I've been impressed about with Middleton is like, man, to have such a ankle injury that was so nagging.
Yeah.
His athleticism, his lateral, his movement, his springiness, his bounciness, it just looks really, really sharp. Obviously, that rehab was tough, but also the dimes. Like, I noticed his passing since he's gotten back. I don't know if this has been a Middleton trademark, but assist numbers are high, finding guys. The dimes have stood out in the game.
Oh, the dime package has just been extraordinary. I mean, he had a triple-double against the Oklahoma City Thunder. A triple-double. And what was funny about that, he had 9 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists. He's coming down the left side. He's looking to go into his bag. Doc calls a timeout. Hey, Chris, like, man, you know, I was about to drop these last two so I could complete this triple-double, get over the 9 points, and you call a timeout. And so Doc, which I loved, you know, put him right back in there, ran a play for him. He knocked down a jumper coming off the screen going right, and then pulled him out. But it was just funny. That moment was hilarious.
Let me ask you something about that type of scenario when you're playing in the league. Like, I know, you know, your career high was what, 40? Like,
40 a couple times. Yeah, 40 a couple times.
But were you cognizant of how much you had, or if you were near triple-double? Like, did that come into play when you were playing in the league, or you weren't really tripping on that?
No, well, triple-doubles, I mean, I had maybe four, and I don't really remember during the course of the game for various reasons, but I don't remember during the course of the game, you know, just how well I was playing all around. It's just you're out there playing. You're out there balling. You're diamond. You're shooting. You're rebounding. You're doing a little bit of everything. You're just playing. And then you look at the stat sheet afterwards and you see, wow, okay, you know, I had, you know, 21 points, 11 assists, 10 rebounds. Okay, wow, I did that against the Sixers. Had no idea that I was on that path. But for Chris Middleton, that's his second triple-double of his career. So I could understand. And normally I would be a little bit of a old school kind of a naysayer, like, you know, you don't want to mess with the game and put a guy back out there just to get a stat. You remember Ricky Davis threw some passes off the backboard, you know, when Michael Cage and Charles Oakley were going for the rebounding title. There were some misses intentionally by teammates, and you know, and you know, so I'm one that usually does not like to. I think Giannis did it. Like, remember a couple of years ago, Giannis, he needed a rebound for a triple double. Thanasis is like, you need one rebound, bro. You need one rebound. And Giannis like throws it off the backboard to himself, and then they didn't count that as a legitimate rebound. But he kind of apologized for messing with the game. So, but in this situation, Chris Middleton, everything he's been through the last couple of years, and this is just his second one. It's not like he's got 15, 20 triple doubles and they come in bunches for him. Who knows at this stage of his career when he'll have an opportunity to get another one. So I like the fact that Doc, you know, was lenient in that aspect and left him on the floor just to get that triple double. Your thoughts? How do you feel about that?
I love it. Well, I love it. If you have a chance to get any type of record in today's NBA, go ahead and get it. Because these records, triple-doubles are you know, they're easier to come by than they've ever been.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of big pushback. No one really cares. That's what I noticed. The sanctity of NBA records has kind of gone out the window with just the scoring explosion with everything. So, yeah, four or five dudes dropping 70. And 70 used to be a hollowed number in the NBA.
Yeah, I'll see.
70 points.
50 was hollowed. 40 was,
I'm just saying.
40 was impressive.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying. It's not the same anymore. No. So go ahead and get y'all money. But, Chris and Dame, talk about just how they do each other, what they're looking like as far as their chemistry is concerned out there.
Well, Chris is a stress reliever for a lot of people.
For sure.
And so Dame for can sure. have a struggling game up until the fourth quarter last night and not have to be overly concerned. It's not like Chris was putting up huge number scoring, but he was distributing the basketball. We talked about the triple-double in assists. And Doc has often said, Doc Rivers talks about Chris, the thing that most impresses him about Chris is his defensive acumen, his ability to be in the right spots, his ability to be a leader, to communicate, to be a middle linebacker, kind of moving guys around and making sure things are going how they're supposed to go.
Doc just talked about it in the post-game press conference when he was talking about just, you know, going over defensive schemes. And Chris didn't understand something, you know, what was going on. He stopped practice. Hey, raise his hand. Doc, could you go over this? Could you explain this? I mean, that's true leadership, not being afraid to answer a question, especially when guys, you know, you had Giannis showing guys pick and roll coverage early in the year.
Right.
And so now you have just a totally different situation. I love how he's that whole dynamic now where guys are communicating when they don't know something.
And it is really fascinating to watch. I mean, just to sit there and watch the collaborative effort. Pat Bev is often in the middle of that, and we'll ask probing questions like, what happens? Okay, now we've covered everything but this. Now what happens if this happens in this particular action? Now what? And then they'll have to reset. Okay, let's go through that. That's a good question, Pat. Let's go through that and make sure everybody understands. Everybody got it? Everybody got it? Everybody on the same page? Cool, we're good.
Was it like that when you were with the Bucks back in the day with Nelly?
Yes.
Like, did you have guys who were like that would, you know, ask kind of these group thought questions that help everybody in the group? Like, could you break some of that down?
Well, what made Nelly such a great coach is he's out of that Boston Celtics system, and that's something that I believe Red Auerbach, Bill Russell, when he coached the team, Tom Heinsohn. I mean, that's one thing they learned is that he always wanted us to give him feedback. He's like, you guys are out there. You got your pulse on the finger of what's going on out on the floor. We come to they called it a net cutting. That was John Killalay, a net cutting time, which is like, you know, crunch time, clutch minutes, net cutting time. It's net cutting time.
you guys were crazy.
Whatever that means. It's net cutting
time. Dude, you guys were crazy back in the day, dude.
And so Nelly would ask me, you know, all right, Em, we need a bucket. What do you want to run? So I tell him, let's run 33 where I could catch it, you know, high post. I'm the guy on the weak side, the elbow on the high post, hold everybody on the strong side. Let me catch it, have a one-on-one. I can take Bird. You know, I can jab
him.
I can double jab into a jumper on Bird, and I'd catch it, double jab Larry Bird. He'd stumble back, and then I'd shoot a jumper. So Nelly was big on that, and that's what I love about Doc, this kind of collaborative approach. And Doc, man, he said something really interesting, Chris. He said when he was asked who this team reminded him of in terms of teams that he's coached in the past, he pointed to the 2008 Celtics. Remember them? Remember how that defensive juggernaut, I mean, Tom Thibodeau set up the defense, KG, Paul Pierce,
the middle linebacker.
But they also had, and this is the key, James Posey, Tony Allen, PJ Brown. Ooh. You know what I mean? Think about that. That's why they were, and people have called them one of the greatest defensive units in the history of basketball based on metrics in terms of points per possession. So that was an interesting. So, and this is the final point before we go to break. With Chris back, now the natural order is restored in the rotation. Now, Jay Crowder, instead of a starter, with that starter's pressure and expectations, now you put him on the bench, he's a totally different player. He's a lot more effective in that second unit. He was okay with the first unit, don't get me wrong, but now he can really flourish as a second unit.
He's got more legs, 58% from the field, 50% from beyond the arc. He's been shooting the ball a lot better, and I think that has a direct correlation between him coming off the bench.
And I can't. I'd be remiss, as they say, to leave out this guy here, Bobby Porter, sixth man of the year. Maybe he won't win it because Malik Monk is putting up some outstanding numbers. It usually goes to the guy who scored the most points, but Bobby's contribution, especially defensively, have been huge this season since Doc has taken over. His offense has been, I call him Sweetwater. You know, Sweetwater because the jumper is sweet and it's wet right now. But his blitzing on Bobby is the guy that blitzes every pick and roll situation. He's the designated blitzer and he does a terrific job at it.
Why is he the blitzer? Is it his ability to recover after blitzes? Like, why is Bobby designated?
Well, blitzer? So as you look at his total package, he's 6'10". He's long. He's one of the fastest guys and quick in terms of. You know, contextually, a guy his size, 6'10", 245, 250 pounds, long arms. He's imposing. He jumps out there on that ball handler on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander coming off a screen. And, you know, you see this big, crazy-eyed brother jumping out at you with the headband on and the beard looking all, and he's making all kind of faces and, and it just makes you like, ooh, wait. You know, it gives you a moment to pause and just like, you know, he pours himself totally into those blitz actions. And it's, again, another beautiful thing to watch. So that's my Bobby. Crazy Eyes. That's what I think Reggie Miller was trying to call him. I wasn't crazy about the nickname. But anyway, all good. Coming up. Man, we are going to be talking to one of my favorites. He is a NBA insider for Turner Sports, and he's just all over the place. You've seen him, and we're going to have a wonderful time with this next guest, Chris Haynes, coming up right after the break.
You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production.
Hey, everybody, we're back here on the Here District. Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson, and we've got a name that NBA fans know all too well. And you see his breaking news coverage and reporting all over social media. He also strolls the sidelines and coverage on screen for TNT and Bleacher Report. Chris Haynes, welcome to the Here District, man.
Man, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on, MJ. I wish this show much success, for sure. I
appreciate that. Well, you know, we were actually like number one a few days ago.
So they said.
We're still trying to figure out how that happened. Was that the Kelce brothers were number two, Chris?
I still don't believe it. I don't know. I think that was Photoshop, MJ. I don't know what's going on, man.
We'll take it, man. I don't know if it's just for a millisecond or what, but we appreciate you being here with us. And what I like to do, man, in situations like this is just allow people to get more familiar with you. We see you all the time. We know your work. You do an excellent job. And I just find your story. I'm in the backstory. I'm an actor by trade also. And so I'm into these backstories in terms of filling out characters. And so let's try and find out a little bit more about Chris Hayes. Tell us about yourself, where you grew up. Did you hoop back in the day? Kind of what's your story?
Yeah, well, I was born and raised in Fresno, California. I was there for most of my life until I sought out this career when I was about 27. But I played college basketball. I played at Fresno Pacific University, which is a D2 school now, but it was an NAIA school when I was there from 05 to 07. Before that, played junior college at Sacramento City College, where I reside now in Sacramento. And, wife and me and wife, we got married young. We were together. She was 15. I was 17 when we first got together. So for a few years there, brother was nervous there for a few years. Brother was nervous till she got at 18. But we met. We met in high school. We met in high school, man. We were in high school together, man. We were in high school together. Now, we got
you were senior. You were senior. She was a 10th grader or so. Or
yeah. It was, you know,
which happens all the time.
We got married when I was 20. She was 18. And we got four daughters, and two of them in college, now at Clark University. And we have a daughter that's a freshman in high school and one that's a seventh grader. And so, I was born and raised in Fresno, California until I sought out. I had a desire, aspirations to become a journalist because I remember when I was looking at the landscape of journalism, particularly in the NBA landscape, I didn't see a lot of people that looked like myself representing that field. And so that was one of the reasons, one of the desires I had in chasing that and pursuing that goal.
So now Fresno Pacific, Jim Saya, the coach then at that time?
Jim Saya, wow. He is, look at you, man. He wasn't a coach then. I had my coach at the time, his name was Clark Shehi. But Jim Saya was a coach there for many years. Okay. And also, coach Rod Adams, assistant coach for the Golden State Warriors. Yes, he was a coach there for many years, way back in the day before I got there. And so, that's where I played at. And then I ended up transferring to Fresno State. I didn't play, but I ended up transferring to Fresno State. That's where I graduated from. Little insight. I used to be, when I was at Fresno Pacific University, I worked as a sports talk producer, and I was producing the Jerry Tarkanian show.
Okay.
We had a radio back there in Fresno, and so I got to know him pretty well.
That would Skip to Malou, Walter Skipper Alston, and that
old DC. You talking Skip to Malou, Courtney Alexander back in the day? You
Detroit dude too. That was a good. What was that guy?
Winfred Walton.
Winfred
from Chicago, I believe. Winfred Walton.
Detroit guy. It was a Detroit guard, like a 6'4", 6'5". But anyway, I covered Tremaine Folks, who played
with my teammate. That's my teammate.
Tremaine. He's from what? San Diego or L.A.?
No, he's from L.A. Inglewood. He's from Inglewood.
Okay. Inglewood. Was Gumby up there? James Gray? Did he go to Fresno State? Did James Gray, Chris, you know, if Gumby?
That doesn't sound familiar.
Yeah, these are all kind of LA, local legends. But I mentioned Fresno State, Fresno Pacific. Jim Saya, Chris played for Jim Saya at UCLA. He was an assistant under Steve Lavin. My youngest son, Cyrus, played for Jim Saya at Cal State LA a couple of years ago. So he's been around our family for a long time. So now you, Fresno. So what comes to mind when I think of Fresno, and this may precede you, so you may not relate at all, but first of all, the Lopez brothers, Sam Joaquin, Mario, along with Quincy Pondexter, I did their games when they were in high school. But even before that, man, I'm telling you, the legendary Pondexter brothers.
The Pondexters.
They still resonate. If I say Cliff or Roscoe Pondexter.
Cliff or Roscoe, for sure. For sure. And so another background. So because I hear you mention the you mentioned that you watched the Lopez twins play in high school. You mentioned that on the broadcast, you know, every now and then. And so Brooke and Robin's older brother, Chris Lopez, we played together in high school, went to Edison High School.
Okay.
Same high school, Bruce Bowen, same high school.
Yeah.
So we played together. Chris didn't, you know, he was our center, but he was 6'5".
Right.
But he was big. And so Chris was a big 6'5 dude. He's our center, right? Junior year, we had a really good team. Then the senior year, we were going to be even better. But Chris Lopez decided not to play basketball his senior year, and he chose to play soccer.
Oh, okay. His
6'5 big dude. Yeah. quit
that hurt. That hurt.
Play soccer. But yeah, I've known the Lopez twins and Quincy, of course. Quincy's my guy. You know, it definitely resonates. Pondex, the biggest name, biggest basketball names, top three in Fresno.
Well, so I'm gonna go you one better on the Lopez's, and this is I call this like 6 degrees of basketball separation. How we're all interconnected in the basketball world. But Chris, my son Chris, played against Alex Lopez, the older brother.
Yeah.
Hall down in North Hollywood, and they were in the same league, and they battled. He was like 6'10", 6'11", and could shoot. I always say that he was before his time because he was that big man that loved to play on the perimeter. And Chris had 33-16 in the league championship game against Big Alex. But so, you know, and then Brooke and Robin would be running around the court, and he's at like 3 years old, but they're about 4 feet tall. Biggest, like,
yeah.
The memories from that period are just outstanding. But what I like about you, man, I mean, you're a grinder. Like, we're Johnsons, we grind. We love to just put our nose down and work hard. And I played for a coach at UCLA, John Wooden, who says, fail to prepare is preparing to fail, and hard work and all that. And just reading up on you a little bit, Chris, I mean, just how'd you get into the NBA business? I saw you were actually pitching some of your projects or some of your columns to different online services for free, just to get a foot in. Just talk about that situation.
Yeah, so MJ and Chris, listen, I don't know how school was, and particularly PE was for y'all when y'all were little and growing up, but I went to school, Fresno State, to get my degree in kinesiology, and that's what I did. My objective was to become a PE teacher and to be a high school basketball coach, right? Mm-hmm. Because there was one job, and I wasn't a good student, but if there was one job that I thought I could do growing up, it was to be a PE teacher, because the PE teachers I had back in the day, they would start class off and tell you, hey, we're playing basketball or soccer for the next 2 weeks. Here's the ball. Y'all go play. And he'd go and do his own thing. And I was like, I can do that job. Like, I can do that. I can do that. So that's why graduating from and doing that. But my last semester before graduating, I had to take a writing class. It was a African-American writing course. I liked talking about my African-American history. I love history and reading up on things. Amos and Andy. People need to read about Amos and Andy. That's what I want to do a documentary on, Amos and Andy. People don't know anything about that, but look that up. But so in this writing course that I'm taking, guys, like, I was not a writer. Like, I didn't know the difference between they are, they're, you are, you're. Like, I'm telling you, I was that bad. But my professor was giving me like really good feedback and saying, man, you're really good at this. Definitely you got to clean up some stuff, but, you know, I could work with you, blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, damn, okay, well, is there a way this can translate over to hoops? Because I love hoops, love the NBA. And so I would start, you know, looking at NBA games on TV, and then I would start writing stories after those games, and I would send them to different publications, see what can happen. And Slam Magazine was one of the publications that told me that, hey, you have some talent. We can't pay you, but you being in Fresno, you're not in the NBA market. We would need you to move to an NBA market. We'll get you credentialed and get you published and so you can get your feet wet. And so I was like, okay. And so here I am from Fresno, been there pretty much most of my life. I'm 27 at the time. And I'm telling wifey, I'm like, Babe, let me do this. Let's go to an NBA market. And she, long story short, she agreed. And I couldn't, LA was too big. Like, I just couldn't imagine going to LA. Couldn't imagine going to the Bay Area to try to make it. Sacramento, I went to junior college there. I didn't really want to go back. And so I picked Portland. And I picked Portland because it was a small market. And it was a 12-hour drive because I ultimately thought I was going to fail and I was going to come back. So I'm like, I want to go somewhere that's, if I fail, it won't be too further part of a drive. My wife found a good school there, Multnomah University, a Bible school down there to pursue her math. And so it all just worked out. But I'm trying to condense this for you guys. And so for a year, I worked for free covering the league where I was credentialed for the Blazer games. But during the daytime, remember, I just got my degree. I just graduated. I could not find any work. So the only work I could find was a security guard work. So I would work as a security guard at a high school and a security guard at an apartment complex. So I did that during the day. And at night, I would go cover the Blazers for Slam Magazine for free. Did that for a whole year. But during that whole year, guys, it was a blessing that I picked Portland because you know, like when I went there, first of all, I was the only media member of color at that time. And when the players saw me, they looked at me like, man, who's this dude? Like, you know, checking me out and whatever. And it was just going to a small market just helped me kind of just build up my style and how I was going to cover this league. And that whole year, you know, I got a bunch of relationships, garnered a lot of trust. Broke a lot of stories, you know, a lot of big stories that made national headlines. And from there, after a year doing that for free, Comcast Sportsnet Northwest, which was the station that was airing the Blazer games locally down there, they hired me for the beat as their beat writer. So I did that for 4 years, and that's how I got to start.
That's dope.
The key to breaking stories like that, I mean, it's just relationships. How do you get that insight? Yeah, I was working with Fox Sports. And our executive producer, Mark Mayer, came up to me and said, you know, the future in this business, this is early 2000s, is the insider. You need to be an insider. Well, what does that entail? Well, you got to get the gossip. You got to get the rumors. You got to go in. You got to find out what teams are thinking. And, man, that was just, you know, that wasn't part of my personality. I mean, that's not for everybody. For you, how were you able to break in with an NBA organization, Trailblazers, and become this guy that could ferret out stories from the insiders?
So MJ, what year was that when he told you about like the insider role?
It was kind of probably early 2000s, you know, man. Early 2000s. Yeah,
that's way before I even thought about getting in the business. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, I don't know that I aspired to have that role. I just developed solid relationships. And I remember when I'm gonna tell you, MJ, so give people like peel back the curtain. So I'm coming from Fresno, California. You know, me and my family, we were on welfare for most of our adult lives to that point. And when I got that job as the beat writer covering the Blazers, doing on TV three times a week, I felt like I made it. Yeah. Like, I'm like, man, I can die doing this job. You know what I mean? I'm making $40,000. You know what I mean? I'm like, I can die doing this job. Like, I'm straight. And so I did it for a few years. And then something, MJ, I started, like, watching how the national guys will come into town. And it's for people that understand this, like fans, I don't think they would know this goes on. But national guys are treated a little bit differently from the local. And I would notice how national guys will come to town and the teams would just like give them a red carpet, like give them the GM that who doesn't talk all year. All of a sudden he gives quotes for that national
sport. All kind of great inside information. Yes. Yeah. I hadn't even heard about it. I've been covering the team for 9 years. but go ahead. I'm sorry.
And so I was like, huh, okay. You know, I would see Mark Spears, that's my brother. I would see how he would come into town and just get what he wants. And I'm like, man, okay, this national role. Okay, so that's what I wanted to do. And so I tell people who are beat writers now, like you should always know the intimate family members of the players you're covering. And also, you got to know their ages, right? You should know that, like the basic, like that's the basic. Yeah. And so when I started my last year of covering the Blazers, my editor, I told him like what I wanted to do, like my next role. And he was like, okay, well, you can do that here. You can, you know, start trying to get stories outside the Blazer market or break news outside the Blazer market. You can do that here. So what I started doing, Mark, is like the same agents that I had connections with that I would only use them for the Blazers. Yeah, for Portland. These agents have players all around the league. Right. So I'm like, okay. So now I'm not just calling about Dame Lillard. I'm not just calling about LaMarcus Aldridge, Brandon Roy, whatever. I'm calling about players in New York, Milwaukee. And that's basically how I – and the players, they all – and I credit Dame. You know, Dame came in my second year when I was covering the league. I credit him because when his – Portland never had a player like him, like a guy who was, I don't want to say flamboyant, but he's a rapper.
Yeah. Or he's a star. Yeah, yeah.
Like he was all these national commercials. Brandon Roy. Yeah, yeah. Brandon Roy was probably the closest, but he didn't. I mean, Clyde Drexler back in the day, I'm too young to know, like, if he was on a whole bunch of national commercials, but Dame was that star. And when he, and when his star took off, because I was covering them and the closest one to them, mine kind of took off too. So I always credit Dame for giving me kind of a jump start in my career. And with that being said, the players talk. So after that, I went to cover LeBron in Cleveland when he went back after the Miami stint. So I covered LeBron in Cleveland for the Cleveland Plain Daily newspaper, did that for 2 years after they won the championship. Then I went to ESPN. But I was happy to go to ESPN because it's ESPN, but I thought that was going to be where I got my national NBA title, but they wanted me on the Warriors. So I did that for a few years, and then finally from there, Yahoo, where I was the NBA national reporter, and I was able to hire my own staff. I brought in Vincent Goodwill, who you guys probably know, Sirette, yep. Sohi, and then from there, TNT and Bleacher Report. So that's, in a nutshell, that's how I got started. But the relationships are key. Relationships are key because players talk. Once players know that, you know, you can be trusted. Because one thing, I'm sorry to be long, but let me say this real quick. I think this is very important. When I went into the locker room, I would see how a lot of reporters, as soon as the locker room opens, they'll run up to a player and just throw a mic in their face. And just start asking questions. While the player's not even ready, they didn't even say hello, how you doing? Mm-hmm. And I would look at those interactions and I would see how the disdain that the players had. And I was like, I don't want to do that. And so what I would do, like Mark, I would do more research. I would like, hey bro, you from LA? Man, I got people in there. What part? Blah blah blah. How's wife and kids? How blah blah blah. We talking. And then it got to a point where when I come in the locker room, they look forward to those interactions, right? And so then when it was time that I did need something, I need a question answered, guys, they were giving me gold. It was based off of that relationship. And so, and then the downside to being, I wouldn't just say an insider, but a reporter, is that if you're trusted, they're going to tell you a lot of stuff that's not meant to be made public. And that's where you really show if you're trustworthy or not.
Take the record specifically, or do you just kind of have a feel for if this is not for public consumption? How does that work with these guys?
Great question. So obviously you got guys who I've had a long-standing relationship with. You know, I can talk about LeBron, KD, Damian Lillard, Chris Paul. I could keep going on. Like, there'll be some conversations, and it don't even have to be said. I just know, all right, this can't go anywhere. Then there are some that I'm not quite clear on, but I'll go back. I'll let them talk, finish talking, because I want to hear what's going on. And then at the end of that conversation, hey, is this okay? Is this okay or not? You know what I mean? So you gotta make sure. But definitely, you're starting off in a relationship, you don't know. And but you always have to ask, like, is this okay? Can I use this? If not, okay, fine. And if you don't use it, you gotta be a man or a woman of your word and don't use it. But that's how the trust starts, and that's how you cultivate relationships.
So Chris, and then Chris, I'll let you ask a question after this, but you reminded me of something that happened to me within the last few weeks. And so I went on my second son, Josiah Johnson, Gilbert Arenas, with Gil's Arena.
So I know where you're going. I know where you're going with this. Go
ahead. You know, we go talk about the All-Star game, some of your memorable, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I can talk about some of my memorable All-Star game experiences. They got on there and started grilling me about Dame Lillard and about the Bucks. And I just start dropping names. I was talking to, and I so-and-so told me, and when I was talking to so-and-so, and let's just say it wasn't received really well.
Oh, man.
But it taught me a lesson. It taught me a lesson. Just don't get diarrhea at the mouth. Be careful what you say, and don't get so comfortable in these situations that you're unguarded, that you let your guard down.
I already knew where you're going with that. I heard that. I heard and saw that clip. But no, comfortable, like, you want, like, when you're on a podcast, that's the great thing about a podcast, especially a good podcast. You want them to be able to feel comfortable. You were let out, like, you know, you may curse or say a few things. You're a little bit more comfortable than you would be on TV or radio. And that's good, because a lot of people want to, you know, get that unfiltered. That's why I was seeing you in the iconic movie, White Man Can't Jump, and seeing you, I'm going to go get my guns and come, you know what I mean? Like, seeing you in that element, like, that is gold. Like, that's gold. And that's why that scene is still memorable and iconic to this day. But that is getting comfortable. That is the
it could get you in trouble. Let me just put it that way.
I would say this, and I don't think this will get me in trouble, but I'm gonna say it. When Kendrick Perkins first got hired with ESPN, and you know, he was saying some stuff, and you know, I think he's gotten way better at it now. But he would say some stuff, and I'm like, and I would call him. I would say, hey, Perk, man, you know, I'm only calling you because I love you. Just be careful. Be careful, because, you know, they may encourage you to say some things. But once you say that one wrong thing, you can, you know, you could put yourself in some situation. So, yeah, you always got to be careful.
Flipping to the NBA, Chris, we're down to the last 15 games of the season. Stuff is starting to take shape and form. I just wanted to get your vantage point on first round matchups that you're interested in seeing. You know, maybe you have a marquee matchup, Western Conference at Eastern Conference, you can fill us in.
Yes, I do. I do have that matchup. That matchup, I'm hoping for a first round matchup between the Bucks and Pacers. Well, I want to see that. Oh. And, you know, right now, it could be. I mean, we'll see. The Pacers got the, I believe they're 660 right now, yeah. And they are looking at, they're a half game ahead of Miami for the seventh spot. But if we could, a 2-7 matchup between the Bucks and Pacers, that would be awesome right there. We've seen the history. Marcus right there, seen the history between these two teams already. They played 5 times already this season. They got that extra game in during the play-in tournament. We saw the stealing of the ball or whatever.
Game ball,
and you know, you had in the when they eliminated the Bucks from the play-in, you saw
Halliburton.
You know what I mean? So I would love, and then I had Malik Beasley on my pod about a month ago, and he said it straight out. He wants the Pacers.
Wow.
And he said the Pacers don't want no parts of them when it comes to the playoffs. So I just want to see that. I think that would be really juicy and really good for the league, because Tyrese, the star, is emerging. And, you know, if he can do some incredible things and get the Pacers past the Bucks, you know, that would take him to another level and put the Pacers on another level. But I just want to see that just for the sheer history of this season.
Well, Chris, you know, and so I'm a part of that rivalry too, even though it was unintentional. And so I'm doing a game when Giannis had the 64. We beat him that one time, and it got a little physical. And I think Bobby Portis might have elbowed Jalen Smith, and Giannis threw a forearm shiver into Tyrese Halliburton. So I think I said something on the air like, yeah, if you got to throw an elbow to a youngster like a Jalen Smith, or if you got to give a forearm shiver to a wannabe superstar, a clear reference to Wally Szczerbiak, what he said last January about the wannabe all-star. I couldn't believe how many of these people out there took it like I thought that Tyrese Halliburton, Oshkosh, was the one. Oshkosh, 25 points, 12 assists a game at that time. No one's ever done that before. We and I featured that on our pregame show and in our open for that game. But I got so much stuff, and so I went to my sons, who I go for advice. You know, should I come back and apologize or what? They're like, no, Dad, let it ride. It's a rivalry, baby. Just stoke that rivalry. don't say a word. You know, because I love the kid. I love his
stand
game.
Stand on business. Stand on business, MJ. Stand on business.
Oh, but you were clearly referencing. It was a slight. It was a joke. It was. You were clearly referencing Wally Szczerbiak's remarks to him.
I love.
Another thing, MJ. Social media is good. Stay off those mentions. It ain't no good comes from watching Twitter. Like, good. And another thing too, I know, like, because I get caught up in it as well, like, something I may report, people don't like it, and you just get just hit with a bombardment of people just hate remarks or whatever. And I got something about those. I want to talk about those people too. But there's always something else that happens the next morning or the next hour. And so when Josiah is telling you just ride it out. People forget about it the next. There's always something else that comes to light. So it may feel like the world is against you and it's going to last forever. Nah. Like, something happens.
The Patriot fans are going to be waiting for you to get out. You know, bye-bye. Take like the empty
group. Ride it out. Hey, hold on. Let me ask you about this. Chris, how old are you, brother?
48.
48. I'm 42.
Yes, sir.
And so this is my thing right here with the people that's quick on the keyboards talking all, you know, I got my wife and kids around, so I can't say what I want to say. But this is my thing. When we grew up, we didn't have social media, right? So if there was a guy who you knew, you didn't mess with him. You knew if you said the wrong thing, looked at him the wrong way, there was going to be some problems. And if you did do that, then you knew to expect some type of confrontation, right? But for the most part, you kept your mouth shut. You know what I mean? Well, no problems. So that's how we grew up. Now, I would say there's probably the 35, maybe 30 and under, where social media is all that they know. I don't condone all this hard talking on Twitter and social media because you wouldn't do it. In person. You know what I'm saying? I don't condone it. Now, this is what I would say. I give the 30 and under crowd a pass because they grew up in that era and they grew up doing that, typing at people, saying stuff.
Hide behind the keyboard. Yeah.
The problem I have is the people in our generation, 35 and up. Y'all know better. Y'all wouldn't behave like that.
Right.
Y'all wouldn't talk like that. And now for you to get on these keyboards now, talk about what you're going to do and insulting, you know, calling out your wife, your mom, your whatever, talking about you this, you know what I mean? You wouldn't do that. I have a problem with you people, 35 and up, because y'all was the ones that were quiet and weren't saying nothing because you know you get your top.
Shut your BS up or whatever.
You know what I'm saying?
And the crazy part is, it's like the celebrity or the public figure has so much to lose. So you answering that, Chris or MJ, or you even merely liking or responding could just trick it off. And so that's the whole conundrum.
Well, and Josiah, second son, Chris's brother, he gave me the great advice. Like, Dad, whenever you get those negative comments, check out how many followers these people have. And so I start looking at the followers. It's like 10 followers, 60 followers, 12 followers. You know, and I just like, hey, you know, I can ignore it then. It's not because I get baited sometimes into when the back and forth. You know, I gotta prove my, and you never gonna prove your point no matter what you say.
Nope.
I went back and forth with a guy over the Halliburton comments, blah blah blah. And I said something that kind of, you know, I forgot what I said, but his response, he came back with a cold response. It's like, oh look, old man is mad now or something, you know. Oh look, old man is mad.
You can't win.
I'm over here.
You can't win.
You can't win because you can't really have it resolved like you would have had it resolved back when we were growing up. You know what I mean? And the other thing is this. So when that first started happening to me, I would send him a DM. I'm like, bro, what you say? Just to let them know. And then most of the time they would respond back. Oh my goodness, I can't believe you responded. Oh my goodness. So that's when I learned this is a game to them.
Yeah.
Like, this is a game.
What an honor. What an honor to speak with you. Yeah. So, but listen, you talked about. Go ahead.
Sorry I went there. My bad. That's old man tangent. My bad. Sorry.
That's all good.
That's good stuff. I love it. Let's talk while we got you. You know, you talked about your time in Portland, your relationship with Dame. What are you seeing of Dame this year vis-a-vis some of his most productive years in Portland? You tell me, what are you seeing?
I mean, adjusting, you know, still adjusting, still adapting. You know, we're coming off of the game, you know, they just beat the Phoenix Suns, and you know, it seemed like Dame has no problem like sitting into that role of, it's basically a similar role he had in Portland. You know, he wants this thing to work so well. When I mean this thing, I'm talking about, you know, with the Bucks and particularly with Giannis. Like, he wants this thing to work so well, and I think sometime maybe he's overthinking it. You know, having to figure out when to pick his spots on being aggressive, when to defer, because it's not just Giannis. Like, I told him, and he knows this is the best team he's ever played on, like probably even minus Giannis. Like, there's a lot of weapons on this team. So it's not just about him trying to think about when to be aggressive when Giannis is hot or not. You know, you got Chris Middleton, you got Bobby Portis, one of the hottest players in the league right now, microwave off the bench. You got Malik Beasley, who needs his shots, you know, in a catch and shoot situations that is. And so, you know, him just trying to figure this thing out. But, you know, I believe he's going to figure it out. And since the All-Star break, he's been playing much better. You know, I think Doc Rivers has put the ball in his hands a little bit more to be that point guard to kind of allow him to make most of the decisions out there in the playmaking responsibility. But, you know, it's just been an adjustment. You know, this is definitely, you know, he would tell you, like, this is not what he imagined, because him and Giannis wanted to play together for years.
Yeah.
Like, they wanted to play together for years. And so I'm not going to put words in his mouth, but I don't know if there is pressure for him to get this right. But, you know, obviously if you've been wanting something for so long and then it happens, you're trying to do everything possible to try to make it work. And I think a lot of times he probably just has to go out there and just play naturally and just let it come to him. But they're playing better. Doc Rivers coming over is definitely I would say this, like, Doc coming over, I heard about the meeting, one of the practices he had with the whole team, where he told everybody, like, what you're supposed to be doing and what you're not supposed to be doing. And he told people, this person needs to have a more of a role, this person needs to have less of a role in this aspect of the game. He even got on coaches. I don't know if that was related, but he even got on coaches to get better individually, to start looking at different ways of getting guys involved, or, you know, just getting better with game plan in general. So you got to credit Doc Rivers, but just adapting, still adjusting for sure. But this is a good time right now, while I know most of the season probably didn't go the way that most Bucks fans would want. This post All-Star break has been pretty solid. And this is a good time going into playoffs. It's a good time to be finding a rhythm. Now you got Chris Middleton back. He came back looking good. So this is a good time to get in the stride.
Yeah, I'm very optimistic. Just because of what I've watched of Doc. Doc's 24-year head coach and a point guard. You know, so one of the first things he did was to empower Dame to be a point guard. You know, he knows that's the energy that drives him, the ball in his hands, making decisions. And, you know, in his own way, his subtle, kind of really, really tactful way, he's had Giannis kind of, you know, give it up to Dame. You run the lane, let Dame kind of bring it up, set a ball screen. Giannis has set more screens than he's ever seen in his life. And it's working out.
Yeah, better screen too, for sure.
Yeah.
You're laying wood on somebody now.
Yep, yep. So anyway, man, we'll see how it works out. And this show is all about here. Whatever happens, you know how it is, man. When you're covering a team like this with these kinds of championship aspirations, it's all about the journey. Now, whether or not the destination is reached for a championship, who knows? A lot of variables, health and everything else, chemistry, that continued chemistry has to come together. But for me, this is one of the more fascinating teams to watch and to cover. I don't know how you feel about that, Chris, in terms of the Bucks and where they are, right? Because the Celtics are playing so well. And so everybody just kind of handing this thing over to the Celtics right now. But I'm not quite ready yet. I mean, though.
You're not sold on the Celtics?
It's not a question of being sold, but you still got to do it on the court. I don't care what you've done during the regular season. When the playoffs gets here, you know, it just depends on who, like Miami last year, who peaks at the right time and who doesn't. So if they peak and continue to peak the Celtics and stay healthy, yeah, they'll be tough to beat. But I don't know, Chris, how you feel about that. But you know, obviously they're the favorites, but I'm just not ready just to hand the trophy over to them right now. You know, mid-March, when there's so much basketball left to be played in the regular season and the playoffs mainly.
Yeah, I'm not handing that trophy to anybody right now. I mean, Boston definitely got to give them the title of being the favorites. But we've seen what Miami has done over the last 4 years, two NBA finals. They're a threat no matter what seed that they're at. And so with the Bucks, you know, again, I think it's very important when you catch your stride. And I think that this is a good, I think this is a good period where we're starting to see Milwaukee playing. I mean, you're looking at Dame and Giannis, man. Damon threw more lobs to Giannis over the last few weeks than he has all season. Like, so you can see their chemistry is working, is getting better. Now it's about getting Chris Middleton into the fold. But no, I'm not giving it to anybody, but Boston is definitely the favorite. MJ, I'm gonna ask you this. Let me give you a trivia question, see if you know about this. Some Bucks fans know.
Oh.
Who am I related to, associated with the Bucks?
Oh man, I have no idea. I mean, can you give me another clue? Is it?
Ooh. Yeah, give us a clue. Give us a clue.
They're a former player. I didn't know this.
Old school.
Current player right now. Current player.
Okay.
Players. I'm gonna say the player's significant other.
Oh, okay. So somebody that's married, obviously. God, I'm not. Ooh, so let me put this together. Giannis.
Right? Uh huh.
From the same general area as you. So, would that be the answer?
The exact. So Mariah Riddlesburg, that's my cousin. That's my blood cousin.
No.
So actually Mariah's dad, my cousin as well. He's my first cousin. Her dad is my first cousin. She's my second cousin. He was my coach at Edison. So he coached Pat Riddlesburg. He coached me and he coached Chris Lopez, wow. Brooke and Robin's older brother.
Wow.
So that's guys, I can't, man. I remember when I found out Giannis was walking around in Fresno. My dad called me. This is like 7-8 years ago. And my dad was like, hey, I just saw a Greek freak in the mall in Fresno. I'm like, what? The Greek freak? Tripping. They know Greek freak in Fresno. Like, what is it, Fresno for? I got a call another day later. Somebody else said they saw Giannis in Fresno. I'm like, what? And they said he was with Mariah. I'm like, with Mariah? So I called Mariah. I'm like, Mariah, what you doing? Are you working? Because at one point, Mariah used to work for the Sixers in their PR staff back in the day. So I thought maybe she might be working for you. I don't know what. And she told me the news. I said, what? Girl, you dating who? Giannis the Greek?
Like, that's crazy.
Go, girl. High five, girl. Girl, don't miss
so that anytime I need an interview from Giannis, I'll text him. Hey, cuz, how you doing, cuz?
Oh, that's real.
Cuz can need some time here. You good looking cuz up in 15 minutes.
Buddy, no, and that's one of the good things about what I've been able to do is watch Giannis. I think I came in when he was about 20, just about to turn 21, and he would always talk about, I'd tell him how many kids I had, my five boys and daughters and all that. He's like, I want to have as many kids as you have, even more, you know. So he and Mariah are getting off to a really good start. They got three. but that makes a big difference, providing that stability away from the court, you know, for him. It just gives you that different perspective. You got four daughters yourself, and you understand that once you enter those doors of the house, it's no longer Chris Haynes, NBA reporter. You're like, daddy this, daddy that. I need this, daddy.
Hey, MJ, sometimes when I walk in the house, I would like to still be known as Chris Haynes. When I walk out, I'm respected.
Right.
When I come here, my wife treats me like Joe Blow.
Yeah,
of course.
I'm like, baby, come on, baby, you know I made a pretty good living for myself, pretty good name for myself out there. I would like to be treated like that here. She said, no, I know you. They don't know you.
Right. Well, you know you're doing something right.
Listen, man, we're going to let you go. We thank you so much, Chris, for coming by. And let's do this again, please, as the season progresses. Just so many great insights and love the work you do. And then once I found out kind of your backstory, you've just had me respect what you do even more, and the way that you kind of ascended to the top of your profession, man. You do a great job, and thank you for joining us here on the Here District.
My brothers, MJ, Chris, anytime, brothers. I appreciate y'all for bringing me on. Again, best of luck with this show. Hope it prospers from here on out.
You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production.
All right. I'd like to thank my guy, Chris Haynes. I mean, what terrific insights. And, you know, finally, Chris, somebody that can relate to me on the Twitter experience and how, you know, meet me in, what was that? Meet me in
Temecula.
Meet me Temecula. In Temecula, baby. I want to throw that out there. So, man, meet me Chris in Temecula, awesome. Homeboy. And good to know that Chris Haynes, you know, he kind of has the same sensibility. So that was good to hear. But it was like, thanks again to Chris Haynes. Outstanding job.
So you can submit your questions, fans. We want to hear from you. Submit questions to Here District on Twitter, at Point Forward Pro, at Old School 88, or you can email us heredistrict@bucks.com. We want to hear from you, and we will answer your questions on air the next episode.
Yeah, because, you know, we want y'all to stay on board. Man, we're just honored to have you all joining us on this fantastic voyage. I am honored and privileged to be the captain of the, I'm the captain of this vessel. And man, look, these final few games of the season will tell the story. But Chris, I love the way this team is headed, and y'all gotta continue to ride with us, man. Continue to ride with us, because the Here District, we're bringing it all to you. We're gonna have fantastic guests. We're gonna answer your questions next week. Come back and join us, please. Chris Johnson, Marcus Johnson, right here on the Here District.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.